This is the Say Yes to Fire Show. And now, join the conversation with Susanna Say Yes as she takes you on a mind-opening journey into the daunting world of financial independence and retiring early. We interview guests. We talk about stocks, crypto, and more. Streaming to the world and beyond. And beyond. Your Mondays will never be the same. Ready? Three, two, one. Fire.
Hi there. Hola. ¿Qué tal? You're listening to the Financial Diaries of a Millennial on her way to financial independence and retiring early. That millennial is me, Susanna, your host. Do you want to retire early and be wealthy? If that is a sound yes, jump into this financial journey where we figure out together how to make your money work for you and not the other way around. Disclaimer, this is free financial education, guys. Not financial advice. Oh, don't forget to follow Say Yes to Fire on Instagram. Let's dive right in. What the heck happened with GameStop? I mean, you probably have seen the millions of memes. Like quotes, Discord, tweets, Instagram posts, Instagram stories. That was hot. So hot that I think that we, FIRES, need to go there and dive deep. And honestly, I think that now, after following, let's say, my initial financial journey with each of the previous episodes, you are ready to understand what happened underneath the frenzy, the drama and the mania. This is actually a very special and exciting episode. Like, apart from the obvious, I mean, it's GameStop, right? But do you know why? It is because of its beauty and swiftness linking concepts that we have explored in the previous episodes in the craziest millennial time way possible. Especially episode 3, Lost on Wall Street. That one is actually key. So if you have not listened to it, I would highly, highly recommend for you to go back and listen first to that one. But quick recap. In that episode, we learned that financial risk usually goes hand to hand with volatility. So basically the market's extreme emotions. But we said that volatility is not always bad if you know what you are doing. Remember that I explained my story about trading options? Like how I lost a lot of money with a certain option due to a market fear. But I also earned quite a good stash of cash due to market euphoria. Like, I told you, it went both ways, really. And if we go back to what I was saying, the cherry on top is that in the previous episode, we also talked about asymmetric bets and we described them and of high risk but potentially super high reward trades or investments. The GameStop story and saga has all of these concepts hidden underneath the surface. And we, you and me, are going to dig deep and get nice and dirty. Like, in a metaphorically speaking way, of course. I mean, we are serious financial people, aren't we, eh? Anyways, this was just a quick recap to bring you back in the game. And now, I cannot possibly imagine doing this episode without dear Cam. Apart from loving the subject, he is highly invested in the GameStop cause and works in tech. So, with no further ado, let's dive in. Welcome, Dirk. How are you?
Hi there, Susanna. Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing great.
Yes, really big thank you for being here. So, tell us about GameStop.
So, I think the real question is, what do you want to know? There's just so much to say, so much to tell.
So true. Okay, Let's do something. Let's start with the basics. When did it all start?
Well, for me, it started this January, but there's a lot that actually went on before that. So I'd say that the real saga started somewhere at the beginning of 2020, like right before we hit COVID. I'd say it's when it starts to get interesting.
And what happened at the beginning of January? Can we maybe start there?
Well, COVID, of course, changed a lot of things. But the reason I really want to start kind of at that pre-COVID area is because it was really a splitting point for this company named GameStop. And if you look at GameStop and if you had invested in them at the start of 2020, you would have been investing in a struggling brick and mortar video game retailer. This is a company that before 2020 had failed to make a profit. They hadn't been profitable since 2017. And so it really wasn't a good investment then. And I think if you had asked me, Dirk, are you investing in GameStop at the beginning of 2020? I would have likely said no. But when Corona, you know, knocked our world upside down, when everything changed, when the market was upending and GameStop shares were hovering at about $3 to $4, there were people who figured out how they could make money, not by supporting the company and buying shares, but actually betting against the company through something called short selling.
Oh yeah, that is a term that I actually know. Okay, maybe to add here for our audience, a short is a financial product. So we could see a short as an option in the form of a contract. If you have reasons to believe that the market is going to go down, you can short sell at the market. Like, short selling literally means that you are selling the market first, and then you're attempting to buy it later at a lower price, of course. Like, it is exactly the kind of the same principle as buy low, sell high, just in the reverse order. So you sell high and then you buy low and you take advantage of that.
So with any bet, right, there's usually people that take both sides. And of course we have the short sellers, but we also have people who at the time when the stock was really low, when the economy is doing bad, and when GameStop had to shutter its 3,000 stores, that actually saw the value and the deep value of the fundamentals of this business. So if you look at GameStop, yeah, it's a traditional brick and mortar retailer, but at the same time, it is the only gaming focused retailer. At the same time, the gaming industry is growing by more than 20% year over year. And so there were people that thought that this was a business that had solid fundamentals and was more in need of a revamp and ready for business transformation rather than a business about to go out of business. So they didn't short the stock. They actually bought stocks. And you might think that this is just some Redditors, but we actually have Dr. Michael Burry, who bought into this and who was supporting it. And if you recall, he was the person who figured out the 2008 housing crisis before everyone. So he knows a fair bit about when to short and when to not. And then, as you said before, the Reddit community got behind it. And I'd say that there was one Redditor who really went above and beyond, and his name kind of implies what he believed in the company. I won't cuss, but it was Deep Effin' Value, who essentially said, look, this isn't a company that's going to go out of business. This is a company that's going to grow and expand. And then finally, the third person who bet big on the company growing was Ryan Cohen. So for those of you that don't know him, he's the founder of Chewy. It's one of the biggest American e-commerce pet stores. And most interestingly, it's also an e-commerce player that managed to successfully outcompete Amazon. So Ryan Cohen is the king of e-commerce, and he took a 10% stake in a company that desperately needed to revamp itself and to embrace e-commerce, people believed. So those three types of investors, right? Your traditional analytical investors, the meme stop Reddit crowd, and then also the activist businessmen all jumped in on this opportunity. So you might say that the shorts had their opinion of the company failing, and you also had people who really saw the value of this company and decided to invest it. And slowly but surely, we're starting to see that the value investors are right in their bet.
This is like super interesting to me, and probably also to you, audience, because this kind of information, we don't see that in the news. I mean, we don't see that I don't know, in Instagram, we don't see that in Twitter. We have to dig deep. We see the drama, we see the intensity, the frenzy. So honestly, it's really interesting to have, like, let's say a less polluted view and more facts on this. But anyway, let's go back to the topic. What is a short squeeze?
So, like I said, we have this bet going on between the short sellers, so people who believe the stock is going to go down, and people who believe that the stock is going to go up, these value investors. And so when you short sell and borrow that stock, you pay interest on it. And if the stock doesn't go down, but it goes up, not only are you paying interest, but also if you want to close out your short position, then you have to essentially sell low, buy high, right? And so a short squeeze, when it becomes untenable for the short sellers to keep their position, they have the force to close their position. But what happens when I buy a stock is the price goes up and the problem gets worse. So I have to keep buying and I have to keep buying to close out the short position. And every time I do, the price of the stock increases, making my problem even worse. So whereas a value investor buying stocks can only lose up to the maximum the value or the money that they invest, a short seller can potentially face infinite losses. Because if the price keeps going up, their losses keep increasing.
God, short selling definitely sounds like a pretty risky investment or trading strategy. But you mentioned you jumped in January. Did you sell?
I did not sell. I am part of the HODL gang.
This is getting interesting and interesting by the moment. So what happens next, Dirk? Tell us.
And so as you might have heard in January, the short squeeze really came to a head. So this was a period in which the price jumped from that $3 to $4 slowly to $10, and it peaked over $1,000 a share. And so that's when trading was shut down within Robinhood, a popular American trading app. And essentially the brunt of the squeeze happened, according to some people. And that's also when much of the mainstream news media coverage of it started and when it really went out in the open that this GameStop saga was afoot. So that is essentially where I jumped in right after that, when the stock dipped back down. And that's also where this becomes essentially a story of two narratives. And there's the one that I think the value investors still believe. And of course, the one that the short sellers still believe, or the people who doubt the stock. And time will tell whether in this round it is the short sellers or the value investors who take home the prize.
I mean, you're definitely a hardcore believer, I can tell.
I do. I strongly believe that this is a class value play. And so the thinking essentially behind it now is that the short position hasn't been closed. And so I do want to put out the caveat, this is where some of the speculation starts. So as Susanna's advice would go, adjust your risk tolerances accordingly, because this is where it goes from what already happened to what we think might happen.
It would be interesting to know maybe is how do you adjust your risk tolerance towards this, let's say, bad or investment? Like, how do you manage the risk?
So the way that I consider this risk is that the short squeeze that might still happen is an idea that the market dynamics might reward some risky behavior from my side. The other part of it is that this is a company that has more cash in hand compared to the amount of stocks it has outstanding than Apple, right? So it's flush with cash just from all the meme stuff. And so although it started out as a meme stock, and although it started out as a risky investment, the fact that the business is transforming itself and reinventing itself means that I'm becoming more and more comfortable with this not being a risky play that might lose 50% of its value in a week. But I'm starting to see that the fundamentals of this business might allow a price that is over 10 or 20 times what it was last year, simply because the value of the business has increased by that much.
Hmm. Let me turn this around. Do you have an exit strategy if it doesn't go that well as you think it's going to go?
I do have an exit strategy. So the strategy for now is that we hold on for dear lives until either the squeeze is squoz or the price increases. But I'd say that the extra strategy here is to see what this stock does in the long run. So I like to have a majority of my portfolio in the classical tech stocks, right? So we have some GAFA, some semiconductor companies, but you also need to de-risk it with something that's recession-proof. And I think that seeing something like the coronavirus epidemic hit us, and seeing that one of the biggest growers in that in that transitory period has been gaming, really gave me comfort and made me realize that when we are unable to meet as a people together, then there's a lot more risk when it comes to other entertainment media like movies and whatnot. While gaming is something that you can do in so many different mediums, that it's actually a pretty safe investment to hedge against those other value plays. Now, when it comes to an exit strategy, I think the truest way to do it is to sell right after the peak of the short squeeze, so that you allow the price to build up as much as possible. And in the long run, I'm really excited about the future of the company and in the value that Ryan Cohen and the rest of the renewed board is now creating.
And if we now get a bit broader, let's say, how do you think this whole GameStop saga affected the rest of the stocks in the stock market? Because we saw pretty big increases with other stocks like AMC. So what is your view on that?
So I don't think that the short selling is systemic to, or is just with GameStop. I think that short selling in general is a fair way to find imperfections in the market, right? Either through discovery of illicit practices or otherwise. Like, if everyone is betting for companies to succeed, then it's a self-fulfilling prophecy in that sense. And so you need someone to control the market. But what has happened, I believe, is that the coronavirus upended businesses so much. And I don't think anyone could have expected that within this short of a period, almost a year, we would already have a vaccine. We'd already been opening up. I don't think anyone expected that the government would go as far as they did when it comes to offering relief programs. And so I think that short sellers, they kind of overestimated just how big the impact of the coronavirus epidemic would be. And I think that we're starting to see that traditional companies and doing traditional businesses are a lot more resilient than we thought they would. And so those companies like AMC, a movie theater that had to close everything, are now using their status as a meme stock to raise capital. And I think that that's going to be a pretty big problem for short sellers in the short run.
Like, honestly, realizing that you at some point become a meme stock and taking good advantage of that by raising capital and by putting that capital to a good type of investment, I think that's marvelous, honestly. Kudos to these companies. What do you think?
Absolutely. I think it's great. At one point, you do water down, of course, the assets that are owned by other shareholders. But you can see that there's such great demand for stocks of GameStop that it hardly impacts the price. And considering that the theory out there is that the float has already been oversold due to naked shorting, another 5 million is hardly a large another 5 million shares is hardly a large amount considering to how much of the float we believe is out there.
I think this whole event is going to go down in the history books. I mean, it's a great example of the power shifting from traditional investing institutions to the people, literally, like you and me, Dirk. I have a theory on how this whole GameStop movement impacted the rest of the stock market, and especially crypto. I think that this, let's say, society rebellion or movement triggered by people like you, me, helped also from a societal perspective, the acceptance of cryptocurrencies. What do you think?
No, I don't think so.
Oh God, I have a completely different view.
No worries. I think cryptocurrency is a pump and dump because it has no inherent value.
Okay, but let's separate, let's say, cryptocurrencies from Bitcoin. How do you feel about Bitcoin and its monetary value?
Yeah, but what does it do? Because it gives monetary value because we believe it has monetary value. But think about the US dollar, right? And everyone values the US dollar. But if you look at the components of the US dollars, it's just some linen and some ink and maybe some tags on it. The thing itself is inherently like worthless almost, right? It's just a piece of paper. But what gives us its value is that we all believe it has value, which is what makes it an ideal currency because, you know, it's light, it's small, it's easily transportable, et cetera. When you look at cryptocurrency, there's a lot of people who believe it has value, and that is the only reason it has value. And I think that, you know, that there might come a time when people decide that, you know, this thing, this monetary unit that can't be spent anywhere, that maybe they don't feel so safe having their savings in that. And that will become a bank run. The only issue with this bank run, which happens to a lot of currency when the times are tough, is that you have no central authority who can prevent that from cascading and breaking down the system. So I think that, you know, Bitcoin is doing high now, and there will be people who see it drop to 20,000, that maybe see it drop to 10,000, that see it as an ideal opportunity to jump in. But if it crashes through that price floor, then it's going to be pretty much gone. So I'm curious to see who the first one is that's going to leave, especially now with China really cracking down on cryptocurrencies overall. You know, I think that about 50% of BTC was owned in China, which creates another interesting challenge that, by definition, if you control more than 50% of the blockchain, you can essentially overwrite the blockchain. So I think there's a lot of caveats here. I think that the technology itself is interesting. It just seems like a very bad thing to use as a currency.
Okay. Let me stop you right there because I'm dying to comment on this. Like, one of Bitcoin's main characteristics, it's deflationary value. This is very similar to how we understand the value of gold, right? I mean, it increases over time because the supply of gold is limited compared to its demand, which can be unlimited. So not a currency in the world is deflationary, actually. I mean, they are called currencies because their value is current. It really fluctuates. And another comment I'm really dying to make is that you can use Bitcoin to buy stuff. I mean, I work in the payment industry, so I'm a nerd when checking these things like payments and payment methods. For example, in the Netherlands, like our famous delivery app, ThuisBezorg, accepts Bitcoin. But anyway, let's go back to the deflationary characteristic of Bitcoin. I think that's much more interesting for our audience. So what are your thoughts on that, Derek?
So I think that making the inflation comparison is interesting because where, you know, Bitcoin itself doesn't inflate, the price becomes high enough that it creates its own subsidiaries and its own differences. Like, I don't think that you should compare like Bitcoin to US dollars. I would compare cryptocurrency to US dollars. And in that sense, yeah, we can't make any more Bitcoin. But when the price of Bitcoin gets to a certain level where there isn't enough liquidity to handle the transformations or transactions, I think that people just create another type of cryptocurrency. So I think that comparing Bitcoin to dollars is kind of like comparing Bitcoins to $100 bills. Like, if you run out of those, you can just use a different form of the currency itself.
This is amazing. I mean, what an episode. But they're going back to how GameStop affected, let's say, the broader market. Not just stocks, but also, as I said, cryptocurrencies. You really do not believe that, let's say, the whole politics and the whole rebellion of the normal people against big institutions of Wall Street, you really don't think that it gave empowerment to normal investors, and they also turned into crypto as a form of rebellion against this, let's say, more established financial systems like central banks or big institutional investors.
So, I mean, if you look at the correlation between the price of Bitcoin and GameStop, it's inverse, right? And I think that, you know, Bitcoin is currently more of a reserve that's being held by hedge funds and large institutional investors, because the way that you keep it on the books, it's not a taxable asset. So there's a lot of kind of advantages to large institutions keeping their money in Bitcoins rather than in US dollars. But I'm not seeing like a correlation between the enthusiasm over these potentially short squeezable stocks and Bitcoin. I think there was a little bit of hype with Dogecoin, but I'd say that's a different dynamic. That's just, you know, another pump and dump setup.
Okay, I think enough of crypto for now. So Dirk, I would love to end this super amazing interview with you with one less burning question. What do you recommend to our audience here today regarding investing in GameStop?
So although you might think that based on the enthusiasm with which I've talked about GameStop, I tell you, like, put all your money on red. But do take this away. You're making a couple of bets. So the first bet you're making is that there is indeed still a short squeeze to be had, so that there's still enough short positions who are in dire enough of a place to where they actually need to buy this stock back, and it's a captive market. The second bet you're making is that there's a great community out there who won't sell this stock before the price goes up astronomically. If you are comfortable taking those bets, if they're within your price profile, then my recommendation would be at least buy one. It's a fun ride. It's a great community. I know that I always get a little excited checking the ticker at the end of the day, just to see what kind of crazy antics have been up. And compared to the rest of my stock portfolio, where it's like a percent here or a percent there, it's a fun ride to see a stock jump to 340 and then down to 200 within a week and then back up. So if you're willing to take a chance in life and buy that lottery ticket, then I definitely recommend it for you, just because I'm having a lot of fun with it.
I know you're not into crypto. I mean, you made that very clear. But the ones who are in crypto, like probably you and me, well, we're kind of used to this 10%, 20%, 30% rollercoaster increase, ebbs and downs. This is like bread and butter for us, right, guys?
I hate losing money, though.
Definitely. I mean, who doesn't hate losing money? Well, Dirk, I think that for my next episode, I definitely need to bring here a Bitcoin maximalist who is going to try to dismantle your arguments. Sorry for that, and don't hate me for that, definitely. But I think that what we got here is amazing. So much juice, and we definitely spilled the tea. So this is the end. Thank you so much, Dirk, for being here, and I hope you had fun.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so I think we gave you some stuff to think about, right? Let's do something. As an exercise for this week, why don't you think about the following questions? First one, would investing in GameStop be within your risk appetite? Second question, do you feel empowered by the whole GameStop saga? And by that, I mean how normal investors are standing up against the big sharks of Wall Street. Once you figure out the answers, why don't you send me a direct message on my show Instagram account, Say Yes to Fire. And if you're not on Instagram, why don't you leave a comment on this episode's page on my website, susannasayes.nl. Find the link to my website in the description of this episode. I will make sure to compile all of your answers and publish them in the next episode about Bitcoin. How a Bitcoin maximalist sees the world with Bitcoin eyes.
You've been listening to the Say Yes to Fire podcast. Consider yourself enriched. For the latest, go to SusannaSayYes.nl. That's Susanna, SELLES.nl. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from the show. Make sure to like, subscribe, and share. Remember, sharing is caring. Till next time.